just like every week.
Hello and welcome to the Herb Doctor with myself, Katrina Hegarty, and Dr. Dailish Clare. Good morning, Dailish.
Katrina, I'm good.
How are you today?
Yeah, great. Yeah, great. New year, new energy.
Great. Please tell me what this podcast is about today.
Well, we're going to talk about dementia. It'll be framed around a case history. Anna is 67 and she's worried about her memory. It's about how much is happening in the population, how to deal with it through your everyday life, how to stay well and healthy through a long-lived, well-lived, happy life.
And this is a two-part podcast,
yeah.
Isn't that correct? So what are you going to focus on this podcast?
We're going to talk about the how it's presenting now, what the figures are, how to address it from the point of view of inflammation and lifestyle.
Great. So Dailish, over to you.
Great. So Anna is 67 and she's worried because she's not remembering everyday things. She's going upstairs, forgetting what she went upstairs for. She's forgetting names and she's finding it difficult to concentrate. She's particularly worried because her father had dementia from his early 70s and it was a long road for him and for the family, and she's very, very anxious to avoid this for herself. She's obviously Googled, because nearly everybody I see now has Googled everything, and she is scared witless because, according to the statistics, most frequently presented, the incidence is going up. It's more of a problem. It's all, you know, bad news. And this is in keeping with an awful lot of the media at the moment, where if there's any good news, it's going to be last on the list to be published. In fact, the number of cases per age of population is not going up, and in the Western industrial countries, if anything, there is a tendency for it to decrease, and that tendency is seen where people avoid chronic inflammatory diseases like high blood pressure. They don't drink a lot of alcohol, they don't smoke, so all of the positive lifestyle things apply to who is getting a problem with dementia. It can also happen independent of these factors. So we'll go into that a little bit more. But the number of cases in any year group is only increasing because the number of people in that group is increasing. So we're not getting more dementia, there are just more people getting dementia because there are more people. That's this. I should have said that in the beginning.
Yeah, but you said it now.
So the good news is that having memory problems, cognitive problems is what they're called, is a privilege of growing older. Being old does not necessarily mean disease. A lot of people express that they would like to die younger, or if they live to be old, they're happy to do that so long as they're healthy. So avoiding dementia, doing all the things to avoid dementia, also avoids lots of other diseases. The other thing is, dementia presenting in the under 65s is also stable or possibly reducing. So we're the happy health channel. If there's a happy angle to be found, we'll find it. All right. What I do see that's not mentioned in any statistics is that we have a sandwich generation. We have people who are having young children at an older age, and when their children are ready for independence, they are often engaged in care of the older generation. And this is getting more complicated because people are living a further distance from their parents, and the services for looking after people are getting more and more scarce. So there's a social problem with care of the older generation, and the older generation is getting bigger. So this plays into the whole feature of dementia. So this is one of the reasons why it's so important to look after our own health. Okay. So the privilege of old age can be spoiled by dementia, and we don't want that to happen to us. So how to take care of ourselves is to enjoy our youth. So any of you young people listen to this, get out and enjoy yourselves. You know, climb mountains, go sailing, do roller skating, you know, go running, swim. You don't have to take substances, you don't have to sit in your room, you know, watching Netflix. Your youth is to be enjoyed, actively enjoyed movement, dancing, you know, get out there. I sometimes think that, you know, well, every generation says that, you know, youth is wasted on the young. Youth being wasted on the young has been said by every generation since the classical Greeks.
Can I also add travel as well? Travel.
Yeah, that's great. Well, travel all ages, but yeah, especially when you're young and you've no responsibilities. I think that's it. Yeah. So think ahead. Don't leave. Please don't leave having a family until the last gasp of fertility. Please. Okay. Mm. So that's important. If you do have the privilege of being a parent, then enjoy your children. Sometimes I remind a lot of patients that we have our children for fun, not for worrying over. We can't help worrying, but make sure we're out there with them having fun as well. So live your life while parenting. Live your life as a couple. If you are privileged enough to have that kind of support while raising your children, and if you don't have a single person involved, make sure you're out enjoying life with your friends. So enjoyment is the key. We want happy hormones. Eat well, and you've all heard me by now talk about the sardines and the oily fish and the nuts and seeds and all those good things. I can never remember what foods are rich in magnesium, because all the good foods are rich in magnesium, and magnesium is very important for your heart health. And maintaining your cardiovascular system is very important for avoiding dementia. I'm not going to list the whole kind of range of symptoms or disease. I will mention some of them, but that's all available on Google. I'm not going to waste your ear space by listing something which is readily available to you. So the big message here is there's no rise in individual risk, and the biggest risk is living a long time. That's a happy risk. The other thing that's listed in everything is that being obese is a risk factor for dementia. And I would argue that the BMI, which is an indirect measure most frequently referred to in these studies, is not related to the proportion of muscle, fat, mass or distribution. So it's actually a very poor association. And there is a difference between having weight, carrying weight, because that's what it is, it's like carrying an extra suitcase. So carrying weight that is built from good food has a different health outcome to building weight that is related to junk food, industrialized food. If you want a definition of industrialized food, it's anything that your granny or your granddad couldn't make in their own kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay. There's also a lot of mention in all of the information sources on genetics, but there is a higher risk with genetics, but because this is controlled by a whole range of genes, it's not direct, it's not automatic, it's more significant if you have multiple relatives who have had dementia. But there are too many other cofactors to consider to really emphasize this. It's not an overwhelming reason. It's not an expectation. So you use it as a motivator. If you've had a lot of relatives who have dementia, you know exactly what's involved, and you know enough of what's involved to go, hey, I'm just not going to be sitting in this seat if there's something I can do about it. So it's not something to worry about. Anxiety is not good for our health. So now I'm going to introduce you to Anna, who is 67 years old. She's forgetting words mid-sentence, forgetting the punchline of jokes that she's very familiar with, forgetting names of people she knew well, and difficulty concentrating. For instance, watching a film, she might lose the thread of the whodunit earlier than she used to. Her father developed dementia in his early 70s, and it was a long journey of care for the family over a significant number of years. She has no other relevant symptoms, But it's very important if you have these concerns that you go and see a health professional and have an assessment so that you, for most people that I've seen over my many years in clinical practice, their mental health score, not mental health score, their cognitive health score has actually been fine. And that reassurance has actually been therapeutic. For those who do have difficulties, it's not like the, then early intervention with lifestyle is very important. Anna has no issues with alcohol or smoking. Her mental comprehension score was good. The cognitive testing showed that it was normal for her age. That was a huge reassurance. She had a brain MRI and there was no concerning findings. But something was clearly wrong because she wasn't living her usual life. Then we went on to mine the clinical history for clues that might dictate any other appropriate tests and physical examinations and other associated conditions with a higher risk of dementia include all cardiovascular diseases, including high blood pressure. Surprisingly, and in much you have to mine deeper in the information, all kinds of conditions like irritable bowel syndrome, diverticulosis or diverticulitis, chronic constipation, endometriosis, early menopause, benign prostate hyperplasia, and many others have a persistently higher incidence of developing Alzheimer's and all-cause dementia. So dementia has many, many roots. Also included are autoimmune diseases and chronic allergic conditions like asthma and depression and generalized anxiety disorder. So you're going, oh my God, which of us does not have one of those? And it's a clue to saying managing these conditions is a way of keeping the brain clear, mm-hmm. right? So what's in common with all of these things? Inflammation, right? Mainstream medicine is increasingly realizing, as a follow-on to in the last 20 years, realizing how core gut health and gut microflora is, are now beginning to realize that this micro-inflammation at cell level is actually underscoring many, many conditions. The other significance of this is that people end up on multiple medications, and these multiples, called polypharmacy, and these multiple medications can cause new conditions and add to the toxic load. Okay? So you're probably guessing, Katrina, that bitters are going to come into this solution. That's the next episode. Okay. So physical signs that can be associated with dementia include having difficulty walking, balance or gait issues, and that's particularly with cardiovascular problems. Motor skills can decline, so people get slow or stiff, difficulty with complex tasks because they can't remember the order of how which do I do first, how do they happen. Very uncommonly, swallowing or eating problems and issues with bladder control or incontinence, but that would be very end stage. But if any of these things are creeping in, it's another reason to go, oh no, I really do need to go and have a health checkup. Then we did all of the pretty much the routine laboratory studies for Anna. She had lots of normal results. And one of the aspects of happy medicine is I always reassure people about the ones that are within normal range rather than just concentrating on the things that need issues. So, for instance, her kidney function was fine. Her liver function was fine. But things that were of concern was that her sugar levels over 3 months indicated that she was pre-diabetic. Okay, so this is the HbA1c, and hers was 44. The normal range is up to 42. And her blood pressure was raised, 142 over 90. And of the cholesterol screen, her LDL, low-density lipoprotein, was a bit high. Now, the thing about the... I didn't have her ratio, which is the ratio of helpful, neutral and unhelpful cholesterols. So that's a test that can be very useful. But we do know that her LDL was high, and her HDL, H is for helpful, or high density lipoprotein. It's one of those things, when it's high, it's actually helpful. That's a way of remembering it. And hers was in the low normal range. It was 1.3 when the normal range is 1 to 2. Mm-hmm. I like people to have a HDL of 2.2 or 2.5. they get extra stars for that. Okay. She was overweight with a disproportionately high waist measurement. And waist measurement is much more useful than the basal metabolic index, which is the BMI. But I don't weigh people because it makes them very uncomfortable, very exposed, very vulnerable. We live in a fat phobic society. If they have weight issues, the vast majority of people know exactly what they feel comfortable with, and that's often within the healthy range. So why make people miserable? They already know, and they're already making efforts, and all of the diet to watch what you eat and move more actually doesn't work for 98% of people, so why go there? She sleeps 5 to 6 hours a night, and it's poor quality. She wakes a lot and finds it hard to get off to sleep. She has an erratic food intake. One day she'll have 3 meals a day, another day she'll snack a lot, another day she'll have a major meal but no breakfast. And she has intermittent binge eating, which she was, I could see that it took a lot for her to actually acknowledge that. And it took patience with finding out about her eating for her to disclose it, right? And this is where I would say there is a therapeutic role in bearing witness to somebody's life as they actually live it and without judgment. She also, in the history, it emerged with very gentle inquiry that she has a very active spiritual religious connection. It's not a question I ask directly, but when I'm talking to people and I ask a question about their support group, they might it might come into the conversation. And it's not a question about the religion or the spiritual connection. It's actually about what support is available to their lives in a very general sense. So my conclusion at the end of that is that her brain wasn't failing. Her life was making it hard for her brain to function well. So there's a few things to be addressed. We explored what might make a difference to her life, and her social outcomes, or her what she wanted to deal with, was that she wanted to go down one trouser size in 2 years. That was with a bit of that's with a bit of exploring with me of her yo-yo dieting and binge eating over the years. We concluded, I mean, when she came in, she would have liked to come down a trouser size in 3 months. But in talking it out, she realised that that wasn't going to happen. It had never happened before, so why would it happen now? So we settled on going down one trouser size in 2 years. Clues of managing that is to eat regular meals of healthy food. And I sent her off to look up the Google, the Mediterranean diet and recipes, and there's all kinds of resources out there. One of the risk factors for Alzheimer's or dementia is actually a good education. And that's available to us all. It's called Dr. Google. So the Mediterranean diet is the way to go. We might finesse that over the time, but that's certainly a good place to start. Walk 30 minutes a day, regular sleep pattern, all the things to do with sleep hygiene. And if we haven't done a podcast on that already, we will put it on the list. And the aim is that she will sleep 7 to 8 hours a night. Actively manage stress. So that's about self-awareness, what's possible, doing what we can, doing what is possible to do in order to solve problems, and leave aside the things that we can't actually change. And and find ways of living with them. Oh, that may sound so easy, doesn't it? But mm-hmm. that's a lot about self-development. So, and I was surprised that some of these things were so relevant to her history. She thought dementia was just something that happened out of the blue and that she had no control over, and that it would be dealt with by medication and that, you know, we'd all live happily ever after. But she was surprised to feel that some of this was doable, where previously she felt very disempowered. She felt that, okay, I can take some of these on board. She prioritised what she would engage with. So on the projected outcome, and we visualised the projected outcome after 3 months, and this has got to do with managing expectations. And I spend a lot of time with patients managing expectations. Mm. People say, how long will I be attending for management of a particular condition? And I'm kind of like, as a GP, nobody ever said to me, well, how long will I be coming for high blood pressure or cholesterol, or, you know, when will you solve my irritable bowel? They came for drugs to manage the symptoms, but they never said, well, when will I be able to stop them? Mm. So there's a peculiar mindset when you see a herbalist that they will resolve the problem and in jig time. Okay, that's a very Irish expression, right? No time at all. So managing expectations is a lot about what you will experience when you go to see a herbalist. The good news is that with the herbal medicine, I'm very familiar with an outcome of healing, which I can't say I was when I was using only the pharmacy toolbox. So there is a happy ever after story, if you like. I projected that she would be coming to see me for 9 to 12 months. Possibly using herbs longer term, but kind of with review every 3 or 4 months. A lot of people, it's actually regulatory that you have to have your motor car checked every year, see if the brakes work, see if the lights work, see if the steering works. Makes sense to me that we should treat our bodies in exactly the body, mind and spirit, in fact, in exactly the same way by having an appointment with your herbalist. It's not unreasonable, I don't think. So that's it for today. That's part two is going to be how we would have interventions with the herbal medicines and lifestyle.
That sounds great. I'm fascinated by what you just said there. I really am. Mm-hmm. You know, and the idea of that lady and her case study. If you'd like this, listen to this podcast, please like and share. And we will be back with part two very soon. Thank you, Julie, for this. Really appreciate that. And yeah, a lot to learn with dementia and everybody learning, and even me as well. I'm learning from you this morning too.
Great.
Thanks a million. Bye for now.
Bye.